All right, financial metric, escrow size, 10% of transaction value, cap amount, tech, 10% of transaction value. What you're seeing, and Matt will talk about this towards the end of our presentation, is with insurance, these numbers are a little bit lower. Without insurance, they're trending a little bit higher. Increase in deductible baskets. You know, there's three different kinds of baskets, which I think we're going to have an opportunity to talk about later, or generally three categories of it. But generally, there's less than 1% of the transaction value in the basket. And a lot of it is de minimis, small mistakes or changes in the deal. Shouldn't have the companies going back and forth with each other, pushing a lot of paperwork, getting a lot of lawyers involved. If there was, you know, a $50,000 discrepancy or change here and there, they want to try to keep that out from the discussions that are happening between the two parties going forward for the next year or so. And then what we'll do is Rob has a sandbagging discussion coming up in non-reliance clauses where there were some changes, and that will be discussed here in about five or six slides.
So on some of these terms, we just add a little bit to what Keith was saying there. So first on the economic terms, I had a great graphic. I can't share it with you because it was in a confidential fundraising deck for a late-stage growth equity firm that was showing that the number of later-stage companies is growing on basically an exponential basis, that the slope was up and to the right, whereas the M&A activity was just kind of barely nudged up, growing on an arithmetic basis. So we're seeing this increasing portfolio of later-stage companies that are available for exit. That's why we're seeing the years go from 6 to 7. I think we're going to start to see 8 or 9. I don't know what we're going to – at some point that has to – unwind, right? Those things have to either companies have to go public or get acquired. So there's some, you know, I don't know what exactly to make of it. That the fund's thesis that I was looking at was to be able to step in and arbitrage some of those opportunities, those later stage opportunities that couldn't get acquired by a strategic partner, and then another financial partner could take it in, but would give a haircut. And there's a lot of trading going on among the financial firms right now. On the indemnification terms. These are definitely where things are trending. I would say that I wish my clients get all these terms. This is what we push for in our bid drafts. Maybe we nudge general rev warranty down to 12 months and try to get 5 or 10%, less than 10% on the escrows. So, but those are good terms. I think they're indicative of the bullish market and the ability of sellers to dictate the terms right now, particularly because there's a lot of private equity and late stage equity that steps in addition to the financial players. In addition, I would say that one of the points that's not on here is the so-called materiality scrape. We're seeing a lot of simplification in some ways of the terms. There's you know, we're getting, you know, multiple striations of the rep warranties basket, but at the same time, there's a lot of desire as we go through the process, rather than just plodding through the merger agreement over and over and over again, to use a so-called double materiality scrape, which is kind of is to say we sit there and negotiate all these, you know, materiality and knowledge this, and we spend all this time doing it, and then we on about page 72 of the merger agreement in section 11.3, we unwind it all. We say, notwithstanding all the materialities, we're going to disregard all those for purposes of determining whether there's been a breach and how much the damages are and things like that. And that's always a little bit of a surprise that we see. But that's increasingly the case. I would say over the last 5 years, if you don't see a double materiality scrape in your agreement, you may negotiate it around the edges, but it's somebody's missed something along the case. So,
great. Thanks, Matt. So we'll kind of move ahead and talk a little bit about Delaware case law. And there's really five areas we're going to talk about. One is fraud issues. These are in private M&A deals. Interested director litigation, conflicts of interest, and defining what is an independent director. And then, as Keith mentioned, we'll talk a little bit about sandbagging, and we'll talk about best efforts and how that's been impacted by recent Delaware case law. So in terms of fraud issues and private M&A deals, so you know, interestingly, post-closing fraud claims have become a lot more common in recent years. You know, you would normally think of fraud as something that would happen very occasionally and would be kind of an unusual circumstance, but there are a lot of claims that are coming up. And there's a couple reasons for that. One is that fraud is often defined in the acquisition agreement, and if it's not, then you fall back on the case law of the state. Normally, everybody kind of agrees that fraud means intentional fraud. So if you intentionally commit fraud and satisfy the elements, everybody kind of agrees, well, you know, that's something you need to be protected on if you're the seller, and if you're the buyer, and the seller should be responsible. But where it gets murky is that some fraud definitions, depending on how you define it or depending on case law, can pick up things like recklessness. So a classic example would be is, let's say you prepared an acquisition agreement and you're working on the disclosure schedules, and let's say the company just does a very sloppy job on the schedules and leaves things off. Is that fraud? It doesn't seem to be intentional because they prepared the schedules. There's no evidence that they withheld something. But if they just do a sloppy job, don't follow up with the right people, you know, that can be considered fraud in some of the definitions. So that's creating a lot of increase in fraud litigation. The other thing is that's resulting in more litigation is, you know, where does fraud come into play? You know, is it limited to the acquisition agreement itself, or does it sweep in things that are exchanged outside of the acquisition agreement, for instance, documents in the diligence room, or conversations or presentations that happen between the management teams?